And next up on Free Radio, it's the January 6th, 2019 show of Bathrop Spears Broadsides, recorded on January 5th as the rain comes tumbling down. And we're going to be looking at the usual homeless scene with shelter. Well, people got tents out at the Ross/Gateway/Heroes camp out there. But it's always a question of how long and for how many and what's going to happen next out there and throughout the city. So stay tuned. Probably got a flashback coming for you, too. I'm making it up as I go today, though. And you're listening to it on Sunday, so I'm going to pretend this is Sunday. And pretend along with me, if you'd like.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
So let's begin this edition with some announcements of upcoming meetings. Not my favorite meetings, the ones I'm most enthusiastic about, but, well, according to the Sentinel, it looks like tomorrow, Monday at 7:30 at the Progressive Missionary Baptist Church Hall, there's going to be a meeting of the NAACP. That's a monthly general membership meeting. I don't know if it's open to the public or if you can join up there if you want. I've never been overly impressed with the NAACP, specifically with regard to their monitoring racial profiling in the police department locally and other local law enforcement agencies. So I don't really know what to advise you on this group. I've kind of dismissed it as an Uncle Tom group to some extent in the past, but I haven't been following it closely in the last couple of years. You might want to check it out. The next day on Tuesday, that's Tuesday, January 8th, is the first shitty council meeting of the year. And the big ticket item on that council meeting is the 7 p.m. session when there's going to be a reintroduction or an introduction of the just eviction protections, which expired on December 11th after the failure of the Measure M and the failure of city council members to press for an emergency ordinance at that time. I don't have a lot of information over the holiday of people who have suffered rent increases and or evictions because of the failure of the city council, or at least in part because of the failure of the city council to take action. I'm talking about the four progressives who can attempt to make an emergency ordinance and raise the issue, and I've talked about this in the past. But what they did do, and what I don't think I gave enough credit to the progressive majority for, perhaps Sandy Brown and Chris Crone specifically, although I'm not quite sure who introduced it at the December 11th meeting, was a resolution which read as follows. According to the summary of the December 11th council session, which you can find online, a motion carried to direct staff to come back at the January 8th council meeting, that's Tuesday's meeting, with a proposal regarding the resources, including funding and staff time, for a task force comprised of community stakeholders, including but not limited to landlords and tenants, regarding policy options around tenant protection from evictions without cause or other relevant measures for the longer term for a 3-month period, and bring to council, and this is the relevant point, and the point that I think I may have missed, because I don't think I stayed up until the very end of the council meeting, the coronation sessions, which had everybody praising everybody else, and the election of the mayor and vice mayor. But here was the phrase that really was key: bring to council an ordinance extending the just cause eviction provisions that the council adopted on a temporary basis way back in February of 2018. So in essence, though they didn't put forward an emergency resolution at the December 11th council meeting, as I'd hoped they would, or at the December 4th council meeting, or at the November 27th council meeting, they did provide for an ordinance coming back at this upcoming council meeting, and it doesn't state it's for an emergency ordinance. So I'm not sure if they're going to run into the same problems as they had in the past. Emergency ordinances require Brown Act notification, which is to say 72-hour in advance notification, unless something comes up in that 72-hour period right before the city council meeting that could not have been anticipated. And in fact, they may be able to pass this ordinance, which they are proposing, which is an extension of the Just Cause Eviction Ordinance of essentially last year. And I can't say that with great certainty or clarity as to exactly what this ordinance is, because it's 8 pages long, and it has to be compared really line for line with the ordinance of a year ago, and I haven't done that. I'm just kind of, hopefully I'll do that. I don't know when I'll do that, if I'll do that, but it needs to be done. In any case, they can, by 5 votes, since it's already been agendized, pass it on an emergency basis to immediately go into effect on Tuesday, which would be a good thing, an important thing, perhaps even an essential thing. And that gets around to a couple of criticisms that have been leveled against the city council winning candidates, the two candidates who now form part of the four council person majority, Justin Cummins and Drew Glover, who won the election in part because of a strategy, I'm told, that was adopted up on campus among student voters and perhaps among others, advising students to vote only for those two candidates and not for a third, so as to make sure that the rest of the conservative or so-called, quote, moderate candidates split the vote and the progressives, so-called progressives, got in. And that worked. But Stephen Kessler pointed out in an article in the Sunday Sentinel, which actually it's the Saturday Sentinel, which you, I mean, it was the Friday Sentinel. Anyways, the Sentinel the last couple of days, that though Cummins and Glover won, they were outvoted as a group by the so-called conservatives and moderates, the candidates who lost, and there were 7 of them, I think, or maybe 8, almost 2-1. I'm not quite sure how persuasive this argument is. It's something to consider, but Kessler uses it as a basis for saying, well, you should therefore, you know, go carefully because most of the community may be against rent control or just eviction protections because they voted against Measure M. Of course, we also know they voted against Measure M in certain, and certainly in large part, or in part at least, because of a huge infusion of funds by large profiteering landlord out-of-county organizations. I don't know if they were even out of state, but they were certainly out of county. In any case, this issue will be coming up at the 7 o'clock agenda, which also contains another significant item, the second reading and final adoption of an ordinance pertaining to relocation assistance for displaced tenants. This could be conceived of as a double whammy, though it does not include rent control. This means if they're going to relocate you, they got to pay for it, but there's no enforcement provisions in this ordinance, so it may be somewhat meaningless. The just eviction, however, just cause eviction may have some significance. I think it probably does. It certainly has been described as having significance for the last year, combined with a rent freeze, which happened. But rent freeze is not on the 7 o'clock agenda. I may give a call to some local activists to see if they can give me some pep talk on how I should be enthusiastic about this 7 o'clock just cause eviction. And I'm not unenthusiastic, really. I mean, I'm not negative about it. I'm just uncertain about how significant it is, how it compares with the ordinance last year, what it means without rent freeze, and so forth. And also, of course, skeptical that it's been delayed so long and whether they can get a fifth vote to immediately turn it into an emergency ordinance, which perhaps they can, although I don't know quite where they're going to get it from. There are three conservatives on the council. There's Matthews, Watkins, who's the mayor, and Myers, the new incoming so-called moderate. And they need to get one of those votes to make it an emergency measure and go into effect immediately. They can't be forestalled this time by the city attorney saying, well, you didn't put it on the agenda, and therefore it's not an emergency measure because there's no emergency finding and so forth. The emergency finding issue has always been a matter of, to some extent, of council discretion. So, for instance, way back in 2003, when Mike Rutkin suddenly announced it was an emergency to change the juggling ordinance and make it clearer, although that what it originally said was juggling was excluded from the prohibitions. It was okay to juggle, in other words. But the city attorney at that time insisted on backing up the police attempts to harass jugglers. And in response, activist Tom Noddy went downtown and started to juggle. He was arrested for it after repeated attempts to bring it to the attention of the police, who tried to ignore him. And he was jailed, and he then called on performers throughout the state, if not the country, to come to Santa Cruz and do a juggle-in, so to speak, or perform-in. And in response, Rutkin panicked out and put an emergency ordinance. I don't know if he put it on the, that's the question. Did he put it on the agenda back in 2003, or did he just suddenly announce it was an emergency and he made a finding? It's a little unclear, but it was easily passed by the city attorney at that time, naturally. That city attorney at that time had made an error. He had falsely interpreted the nasty set of ordinances passed the year before by the conservative city council that extended the no sitting zones, the no spare changing zones, the no vending zones, all out to 14 feet from their previous 6-foot area, and out to 10 foot, I think, for performing. And then that was ultimately extended further. The issue of whether there's an emergency finding that needs to be made, it's really a matter of the discretion of the city council. I appreciate the fact that people need to be informed about an item that's coming up on the agenda, and it seems to me careless and, I don't want to say improper, that's not the right word, but For the progressive council members not to demand that something be put on the agenda, as I don't think Sandy Brown did. I confronted her publicly about this. She said she talked to other council members, and she said she talked to the city manager, but the person you have to demand it of is the mayor, and that was then Mayor Terrazas. I don't think she did. She never said she did. She also falsely claimed she talked to me about it. She didn't. But, you know, I'm glad she's doing it. She and the other council members are doing it now. And there are also a couple of other items coming up on the agenda. That's coming up at 7 o'clock if you want to check out that evening session. There's an item to move oral communications from the beginning of the afternoon, actually the middle of the afternoon session, or between afternoon and evening sessions, actually, at 5:30, where it currently has been sitting throughout the last couple of years, thanks to David Terrazas and his city council, to the beginning of the 7 o'clock session, where it used to be years and years ago, which is a time that's more convenient for everybody but homeless people who are herded into shelters or have to go early into shelters and therefore can't be involved in public activity after they're supposed to be all locked up in their snug little beds, you know, or they're on their snug little mats, I should say. They don't get beds. They get mats on the floor, as I understand it. But in any case, that will be coming up. It looks like the council is reverting to the system that was used almost a decade ago, 3 o'clock and 7 o'clock sessions. A closed litigation session at 3, and actually the actual afternoon session at 3:30, and then general business, public hearings, and matters of public interest at 7. That was in part how it was done the first 20 years I attended city council meetings with any regularity, perhaps too much regularity. You would have public comment right before the evening session or right at the evening session when major issues would come up, and so most of the public, who, as I said, is not homeless, could be involved. The items on the afternoon agenda look like they're only the ones on the consent agenda, which is the agenda that I think has been essentially neutered as far as the public is concerned, or insulated from public comment, because you can't get an item taken off the agenda unless you can get a council member to do it, unlike at the Board of Supervisors until recently when they adopted the policy of the City Council, where you could previously, and at City Council about 10 years ago, you could remove an item simply at a request of the public so that it would be discussed individually. Staff would report on it individually, and the council would have to address it individually instead of just throwing it into a clump of items and you getting a brief squeak of protest or question before it gets rolled on through, unless you can get a council member to pull it off for you. That's still the case, but this is again where I have to tip my hat to Sandy Brown, who I've been rather strong in criticizing regularly in these broadcasts. She still hasn't come through with the information that she agreed to do 2 years ago, and I repeatedly reminded her of, and she repeatedly reassured me she was going to send me, but never did. And it wasn't like it's a lot of heavy information. It just required a simple email to be sent to appropriate staff members. And if they didn't answer, that's not her fault. She refused to do that after saying she would. And I'm not going to stop pointing this out to everybody, because if she can screw with me or ignore me as a member of the public, she can also do that to you. And an individual council member who makes a commitment should either make it and do it or have a good reason for not doing it. She doesn't have a good reason, as far as I know. She hasn't told me anything. Anyway, coming up at the afternoon session of the Tuesday City Council meeting, they're planning to televise Santa Cruz Planning Commission meetings, which is probably a good thing. The more publicity these meetings have, the better for those who want to waste their time on them. Then there's a resolution to move oral communications, as I may have mentioned before, to the beginning of the 7 p.m. session. And specifically, there are a couple of other modifications, which are as follows. The maximum time will be extended from 2 minutes to 3 minutes, which is what it was before Ryan Coonerty got a hold of it about a decade ago. Then there's an additional provision: on occasions when additional speakers remain to address the council after the 30-minute period, they will be given the option of signing up to address the council at the beginning of the following city council meeting, or if the council speaker feels it's urgent, to speak at the end of the evening's city council meeting. And that was what the supervisors do still regularly, as I understand it. You can come in at 9 o'clock, try to speak there. If there's so many people speaking that you can't get your oral communication in, which is information that you want to give, or claims that you want to make that are not on their agenda, then you have to wait until the end of the session. You can do it at the end of the session around 4 o'clock. It's obviously a little more difficult due to the city council that way, because it goes into the nighttime. But it's still an opportunity for you. There's also a provision: on occasions when a large number of speakers are present, individuals must be allowed to speak for 2 minutes, but the length of oral communications will be extended to 45 minutes. I think it should be extended further, but that's better than it was. Some of these suggestions I made to Abby Samuels, who is working with Chris Krohn on putting this together, as I understand it, and they're not really any brilliant ideas. They're just sort of a restoration of the past situation where there was slightly more time for the public to speak. The real issue, of course, is whether the the public can get items on the agenda themselves, about whether they can have real dialogue with questioning the staff, things of that sort, which, because the staff has the real power in the city, and that's not yet provided for. But, you know, it's not a bad idea that these changes have been made, and, you know, I support them. So that's happening in the afternoon, starting at 3:30 when the regular afternoon session begins. 3 o'clock is the closed session, which if you're interested in that, check the agenda. You don't get much information there because they're still not putting on the agenda the full claims made by people who have potential lawsuits against the city and who are demanding some compensation, some recompense, some justice from the city.
And all you jolly jokers, and listen while I hum a story I'll relate to you of a great American bum. From the east to west, from north to south, like a swarm of bees they come. They sleep in the dirt and they wear a shirt that's dirty and full of crumb. Oh, it's early in the morning and the dew is off the ground. The bum arises from his nest and gazes all around. From the boxcar and the haystack, he gazes everywhere. He never turns back upon his track until he gets a square. I've beat my way from Frisco Bay to the rock-bound coast of Maine, to Canada and Mexico, and wandered back again. I've met town clowns and harnessed bulls as tough as a cop can be, and I've been in every calaboose in this land of liberty. I've topped the spruce and worked the sluice and taken a turn at the plow. I've searched for gold and raining coal and worked on a river scow. I've dug for clams and built the dam and packed the elusive prune. But my troubles pale when I hit the trail, a pack in my own balloon. Oh, standing in the railroad yard, awaiting for a train, waiting for the westbound freight, but think it's all in vain. Going east, they're loaded, going west, seal tight. I think we'll have to get aboard the fast express tonight. Oh, lady, would you be kind enough to give me something to eat? A piece of bread and butter and a 10-foot slice of meat. A piece of pie or custard to tickle me appetite. For really, I'm so hungry, I don't know where to sleep tonight. You know, I'm the most unlucky bum in the world. If it was raining soup, I'd be standing with a fork in my hand. I went to a house this morning, and I said to the lady, "Good morning, mum." And she said, "Good morning, bum." I said, "Lady, will you give me a handout? I'm so hungry I could eat grass." And she said, "Well, go around the back of the house. The grass is longer back there." Oh, sleeping against the station, all-a-la-la-lation, that's our recommendation. Hoorah, hoolee, hoorum, for I am a bum, a jolly old bum. I live like a royal turk. I have good luck and bum on my chuck and never bother for work. I met a man the other day I never had met before. He asked me if I wanted a job of shoveling iron ore. I asked him what the wages were and he said 10 cents a ton. I said, "Old fella, go chase yourself. I'd rather be on the bum. Oh, sleeping in the pogies, ogie, ogie, ogies. Smoking snipes and stogies, hoorah, hooree, hoorum. For I'm a bum, a jolly old bum, I live like a royal turk. I have good luck and I bum on my chuck, God rest the man that works."
So that was an old 78 from 1929 called The Bum Song by, quote, hobo, unquote, Jack Turner, a.k.a. Ernest Hare. Never heard of either Jack or Ernest, his alter ego or alter name. It also was interrupted by, unfortunately, the sound of an old city council meeting, which came flipping off the YouTube. My apologies, or actually off the internet somewhere. But you got most of it, and it's it's a 75-cent old 78 record, which moving on. So now let's pick up Food Not Bombs commentary from Keith McHenry, who's talking about the upcoming possible restrictions on Food Not Bombs organizations throughout the state under the new law that's supposed to make it easier for nonprofits and charities and individuals to provide food without elaborate permits or expensive and extensive kitchen equipment or commercial kitchens. But in fact, according to Keith McHenry and others, it has exactly the opposite effect. Let's listen in. This is from a conversation from December 29th at Food Not Bombs. Anything happening elsewhere in California in terms of harassment of Food Not Bombs folks or the new law that you've talked about that will be going into effect in early January, essentially enabling cities to require permits?
Nothing particularly, although some groups have contacted me to get my opinion. Ventura Food Not Bombs, that's where the woman is who introduced the law. Monique Lamone, that's her district. So there's been that, but I think the most bummer thing has been the cutting down the trees at People's Park. You know,
I heard that. Give us the story there.
Yeah, they came in yesterday and took out like maybe I think 40 trees. That's a lot.
In preparation for the new, all very exciting student dormitory?
Yeah, for the student dormitory, yeah.
Now, of course, there were thousands of local neighborhood people opposing the tree cutting.
Well, sadly, the way they did it was early in the morning right after Christmas, so that they barely got anybody out there. That's too bad. But a few people did show and got arrested. And actually, oddly enough, a viral video has gone out of one of the UC Berkeley cops beating up a person sitting in the park, which has been reposted a lot. That's a particularly violent video that seems to be making the rounds.
Any reports on the local Andy Mills police force or Tony Elliott's Parks and Rec Ranger?
I haven't heard any real reports, except for it does seem like more people tell me they got
rain boots. We
could get you a rain boots. What size?
We're 9.5
10. Let me look and see what we have.
And we'll leave it there. We'll leave it there.
Gina,
you say it's a quiet day.
Mm-hmm.
How was your holiday?
Equally quiet. Mainly I spent time with downtown and just seeing how people were experiencing a joyous, you know, festive anything. And basically, we were taking care of some very serious negative entities.
How did you do that?
Gathering together a lot of shamanic energy, medicine people, people who are, you know, very versed in Native American medicine. Also, people who have been to, you know, numerous countries, traveled through space even. Play didgeridoos, music, know how to tone an area, bring things into a level of receptivity so that the Reiki of the energy, which is a building of energy to affect something in a positive way, can begin to take form in the immediate space and allow people to move through that space with a sense of cleaning or cleansing, a purification to go on. So that's basically what we were doing today. And because we're moving into the new year, we're asking to ourselves to be more receptive to that type of energy.
Who is we?
That would be numerous spiritual beings that are here. Also,
a select group?
I would say it's always going to, you know, show itself what is being selected to offer a healing to, and you know, make a blessing, bring a peace to something, and still a notion that love is the presence that is being offered to the, you know, group. Sorry. And just a lot of other dynamics working right now that are, you know, a lot of spirit is talking.
And we've been talking with
Gina.
Thanks.
So the elders is being fulfilled. The one question of God's infinity, which I do apologize for preparing flesh, which amount of seed more and more.
Well, I caught some of that, and we've been talking with?
I've been talking with Muhammad Abbas, most of us.
Thank you. Well, from the mystical to the unintelligible, perhaps, but here's Well, some audio from a Berkeley trip I went on, gosh, I guess it was a couple days ago. Well, yesterday even. Well, on Friday. And picked up some Street Spirits, which has some interesting articles. I may do a little reading from them. And you can also actually get Street Spirit yourself. I don't know if the current issue is online. It has been in the past under thestreetspirit.org, and I'll check to see if it is. And it looks like they're still lagging. Only the August issue is the latest issue. But you can get the current in-print issue if you go by the Sub Rosa Cafe. That's next to the bike church. Or run into me. I'm the guy with a car covered with bumper stickers. Or there are a few of us, I guess. But look for the guy with the long beard and the wise and compassionate eyes and the hefty belly. Not as hefty as it might be, but still pretty hefty. You can sell Street Spirit for $2 or whatever you can get for it and keep all the money. It also has a lot of homeless news and views, mostly almost entirely from the East Bay right now in San Francisco. And there's a long piece on Julia Vinograd for those of you who appreciated her poetry. She died, I guess it was last month, or perhaps it was the month before, but it was in the last few months. Anyway, up in Berkeley, People's Park is, if you're listening to this show or you've been following news from there at all, has been stripped of a bunch of its trees, and there's some people up there doing some People's Park defense. And I wandered into the park as it was growing cold on Friday evening and got these interviews. So it's about 5 after 5 on January 4th, 2019, approaching the denuded People's Park. Drove by it earlier and noticed the trees at the far end of the park were seriously cut back. Here is cold. It's about 5:05. It's still a stage here. I don't know if the bathroom is still open, but there's still structure over there. And the music you hear is coming from the boombox of a guy on a bike. If it's illegal to be in the park after dark, it is. I haven't seen any signs. One person on the stage, surrounded by a property or somebody's property, and one guy is playing basketball on the basketball court, or trying to. With
Lucy Love.
And Lucy, you're here at the stage. And you remembered the last time we got together and spoke. Here you are in the, defending the park, but it looks like you're a lone warrior. What's going on?
Well, you know, the youngsters are up there organizing, and I'm trying to get them to see that I need some electricity help to get up the hill. You know, we're still trying to work on communication, but considering where our societies around the world are going through around communication, you know, there's work to be done, but the idea is to save the park. The slogan that's come to heart is, you know, take a cove, save a grove, save a tree and set it free. Trees are people and so are we.
And give us a kind of a capsule history of what's been happening in the last year here at People's Park, if you want.
Well, I can tell you what's happened in the past couple weeks. Basically, during the holidays, although we have UC Berkeley student support, while the children have been on vacation, or let me say the youngsters from the UC Berkeley, they were into cutting the trees during that time because of vacation time, which is a tactic towards the homeless anyways that's used a lot. But that was when they came in to do their pruning. They said that the trees were actually sick and they were hitting the power lines, but actually a lot of these are young trees. If you go look up there at the stumps that we have, that we've uncovered, they basically turned all the trees into chips, so we have no way to prove that these trees were, you know, they were actually healthy. You know, and the first tree they went to was Hate Man's tree. So what's that all about? That's a cultural hit for us.
Tell us about Hate Man's tree.
Hate Man's tree, you know, pretty much Hate Man used to hang out up there. And the community for all these years would go up there and hang out with Hate Man and learn about the idea of love and hate and cooperation and how to work on that, how to get from hate to love and how to work through that through, you know, ways of creating conflict resolution.
Explain a bit about Mark's tradition, Hate Man's tradition.
What do you mean?
Well,
Why would people call him Hate Man, for instance? Who, our listeners may not know about this guy.
Well, I mean, you tell me.
Well, I know what I have experienced from him over the decades. I wasn't around for his last days and what he was doing. We did a lot of pushing in the old days.
Yeah, exactly. So basically, some of the ideas around conflict resolution that I've been taught is the idea of, you know, pushing. You know, like if you want something and the other person may be saying no around some issue, you can push and see who wins that push.
Physical pushing.
Yes, this is a physical pushing of fists or shoulders. It's very therapeutic. For many, it's been a way to learn about conflict resolution.
He wasn't an expensive therapist you would go to. He would just walk up to you, and when you would talk, he'd say, "All right, let's push." He would start with that kind of an opening, as I remember. Is that your recollection?
Well, for me, by the time Hate Man had passed on, my connections with getting close to Hate Man and driving up this hill to get here as a homeless person stuck on Shattuck, I was not able to have all some of that beautiful connection, but I had seen him from afar all these 20 years that I've been out here on Telegraph. So a lot of the youngsters had those connections, the elders, they've taught me. One of my friends, Griffin, is the one who taught me about push and slap, which was another method, was to slap until you get your anger off your chest, you know, slap back and forth with each other, slapping hands, you know, give me five, and slap, 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 slap. And, it's really touched my heart to create a cove next to the cove where the Hate Man tree's been cut down. For me is an honor, because Mother Nature guided us to create a cove at one of the trees that survived, and we made it out of the debris of the desecrated trees. It's just really beautiful, and we've been sleeping in that cove, Ninja, Kitty, and I, and it's been a blessing to try to see if we could save this park and help people realize that the community still needs People's Park, even if people don't realize that at this time.
Any thoughts that you want to say for Free Radio?
I believe we should save People's Park. I believe the community needs it. As far as Hate, his theories of oppositionality and the forces of love and hate pushing against each other is a good core to look at the struggle for People's Park, because at this point we're at the forces of the university and our forces pushing against each other to try to save this park.
The little versus the big.
The little versus the big.
And we're talking where?
Lisa Teague.
And Lisa, are you spending the night here yourself?
No, I'm not. I am a community member. I live right across the street. I provide support sometimes. I'm a member of the People's Park Committee. We're working to try to save the park.
How supportive is the local community? I'm getting the impression less supportive than a decade ago, but what do you think?
I think I would agree with that. I actually moved into the neighborhood in 2011. I'd been homeless and I was housed here, which has been a wonderful thing. And I think that community support was already fading. There had become a perception that the park is some sort of cesspit.
What was your perception?
I see it as people living their lives and in a green space that we can all share, that we all have the potential to develop and improve if we were allowed to. And I've seen that, you know, since I came to the neighborhood.
Did you spend much time here yourself?
Oh, yeah.
What would a typical visit at People's Park before you involved? Just a walk through, or would you hang out, or what would you do?
I would come hang out. At times, well, I live on Social Security, so there have been times when financially coming in the afternoon for Food Not Bombs was absolutely a necessary thing to do.
How frequently did they come here?
Oh, Food Not Bombs comes Monday through Friday.
About what time?
They're usually here between 2:30 and 3, and they've been doing this for, oh, gosh, I want to say 30 years here in the People's Park. And they provide mostly vegan, some vegetarian meals, incredibly healthy food, and also provide, you know, some groceries and vegetables and
were
stuff.
Were they here today?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. On Saturdays, a number of...
That'll be tomorrow.
Yeah, a number of church groups, not as many as in previous years, come through and give out food, sometimes hot meals, sometimes sandwiches. A lot of times people will have a little, like, clothing giveaways and stuff like that.
The free, is there still a free clothing box?
You know, the university hates the free box. We're not sure why. The last free box was destroyed some time ago. And
it used to be over there.
Yeah. Yeah, and they built a metal one that was, you know, was going to withstand
university attacks.
Yeah. And they took it. So actually we've been talking about building a new free box up there, where the trees have been cut. There's a free table now that has things that anyone in the community can help themselves to if they are in need.
Now, are the police still going after folks for being here at night?
They seem to be just sort of watchfully waiting. They've come through and talk to people. There was...
Are they threatening them with citations if they don't leave?
Not so far. Have they threatened you with citations for not leaving? Not so far, right?
Well, we had some stuff going on over there in one part of the park yesterday, but we're not sure what happened with that person. I mean, I specifically don't know all the details. Basically what we're looking forward to is asking people to come take a cove and save the grove. And if they can come and hang out, even if it's picnic style, sleeping bag style, whatever way, during the day, at night, bring their families, their children, whenever they feel that they can come and, like, you know, sit around a tree and give some love to the tree and just stand for it, take pictures, put it on their Facebook, Instagram, whatever. It doesn't matter how long they do it. What matters is it's just that they do it. And you know, I think it would be an exciting way to, you know, you don't have to necessarily be on the front lines 24/7, but it would be a way to claim the park as a people's park.
Now, have people been staying here at night?
Some of us have, but this is all bare bones. We're just getting started, and we're hoping to get attention nationwide for people to come on down and help us.
And have you been bothered by police for being here at night?
Yes and no. But I think there's a cultural opportunity, and I think both sides are waiting to see what's going to happen.
And, of course, we've been talking with...
Lucy Love?
Indeed. Anything more you would like to say?
I don't know if you have any other questions. We do have an organizing meeting every Sunday right here in the park at 1 p.m. 1 p.m. And everyone's welcome. And you can find more about...
Is there much media support? I mean, this goes out in Santa Cruz, so I'm not going to guarantee that anybody's even going to show up for the trees or the organizing meeting, but at least they'll hear about it.
Yeah. Well, we actually got a fair amount of coverage the day that the trees were cut. And Berkeleyside, our local online...
I read that article.
Was down here very early in the morning. The Daily Cal just did a story yesterday and quoted one of our members, our committee members, and talking about our desire to continue to apply for landmark status.
Any reaction from the student community that you're aware of?
Well, you know, they're all gone right now. And, of course, that's why the university does things like this when the students are gone. Historically, it's been a park thing that, people who've been with the struggle for decades actually said, you know, they're probably going to do something this break. And in fact, when they the tree cutting started out of an arborist report that was commissioned about 3.5 years ago. And in 2015, Easter break, they came in and cut a few trees.
I remember we came up and interviewed some folks.
Right? Yeah. And so, but we do have, we started at the end of last semester having a meeting on campus with the students, interested student groups on Thursday nights. And that's something we're going to continue doing. We're trying to get the students more involved, talking to the co-op, stuff like that.
But they haven't rushed back from their vacation.
No, they haven't. Yeah, but can you blame them? We don't have to be in school until January 15th, you know.
No, that's the date, January 15th.
Yeah.
I mean, I see a number of tables up there. Looks like some folks are gathering. How many people would you say are in the park at the moment?
You know, I think there's probably 8 or 9 people sitting up there. I mean, just in general, I mean,
maybe a dozen or so, maybe a little more.
Probably, 20, something like that.
Around 20 to 50 people.
Yeah.
20 to 50 people around, depending on, you know, what time of the day or the night. But what's nice is to see, you know, we're getting community response, and actually our connections are coming from community of just meeting them in the park. So a lot of our networking is actually grassroots here, old school, where it's like we're literally co-creating people, and they're coming and finding out what the situation is and networking with us. And we're just beginning, so we're needing as much as possible to help us move forward. If anybody has got internet talents and savviness, they're more than welcome. There's so many ways to participate and not feel pressured of the front.
How can people in Santa Cruz participate at a distance?
Spreading the news all over their medias.
And there's a Facebook page called People's Park Committee that follows. I administer it, and it follows it pretty closely, day to day. So that right there.
Keeping a watchful eye from next door.
Yes.
There's different GoFundMes. They're going to be going up for different parts of the project. I mean, there's going to be so many things. And if people want to help us put those things together to create an infrastructure for this project, I think it's important to understand that Berkeley is a beacon to the world. And if we can represent something that gives hope to the world, that we are trying to focus on the idea that in this time and age of high technology and robotics, that we are still humanity. We are still a people, and nature is the most key important thing that we are also a part of and interconnected with as a world.
Will you be staying the night yourself, Linda?
Yes, on and off, depending on how things are going on with what we're doing in the park. Right now we're in the beginning phases, but yes, I've been here most of the days. Last night there was an issue with getting sprayed during a Native American Indian ritual that we were doing over there, and we got sprayed by UC cops. So I'm a little bit asthmatic, and I stepped out for a minute.
Sprayed with?
Fire retardant without letting us get up in time to get away. So, and not respecting the Native tradition of what we were doing. It was very safe. It was very monitored. Running Wolf was running it. He stepped away for a minute, and by the time he made it back, it had already been extinguished.
How many cops were involved?
Just one quick cop came up sneaky from behind, told us to get up, and then just immediately started spraying before we can actually get up.
Nobody tackled him to the ground, of course.
No, but considering I'm disabled and I also use canes in a wheelchair, it was horrible because I got majorly sprayed out of that thing, and I've been sick since, so I'm not feeling too well about it.
It's a pretty cold night tonight, too.
Oh, the nights have been chilly, and that's the whole point is, you know, there are supplies to be needed to keep us warm, other creative ways to bring the project together with people here in the park, with people around the park, whether if it's, you know, there's many ways to kind of bring this all together and bring this to the table.
And we have been talking with
Lucy Love.
And with
Lisa Teague.
Thank you. Thank you, Lisa.
And now a bit of music. This is something I think I've done before. It's an updated version of We Didn't Start the Fire, which perhaps is best viewed on YouTube because you can actually read the lyrics, but I think they're also intelligible. So here goes.
We Let's go for Russian schism, communism, Germans reunite. Nelson in South Africa, Channel Tunnel, Kasparov, ice caps, poll tax, Hubble in the sky. Rodney King CDs bombing over Lockerbie grunges. Never mind Pee Wee Herman out of line. Don't ask, don't tell. Oklahoma City hell. Farrakhan, million strong, marching on the front lawn.
It was always burning since the world's been turning. We didn't start the fire. No, we didn't fight it, but we're trying to fight it.
Four more Clinton, Gold, Lewinsky, and Tupac Shakur, clone sheep, impeach, OJ goes free. Harry Potter, Princess Di, Matthew Shepard, hate crime, Y2K, Columbine, party like it's 99. Hanging chads, Mark Rich, 9/11 terrorist, Enron, undone, sniper scare in Washington, Kirby, Ozzy, Eminem, weapons in Iraq again, Columbia, governor, mother, spirit, jail time.
Spark of fire, it was always burning since the world's been turning.
Business is too big to fail. Phelps, Bolt, Sake, the whales, bailouts, California proposition need. Barack Obama, yes we can. H1N1 back again. King of pop, world crowns, housing bubble breakdown.
Spark of fire. It was always burning since the world's been turning. We didn't start the fire. No, we didn't light it, but we're trying to fight it.
Unemployment on the rise, civil unions legalized, they float killers taking in, citizens united in Osama and Obama gale, fighting in Tahrir Square, Haiti quake, Gulf spill, Tea Party standing still, camping manning WikiLeaks, Occupy Wall Street, Linda K, pepper spray, what else do I have to say? Ceiling hit, royal wedding deficit, Kim Jong, jobs gone, rise of the smartphone, ancient Mayan prophecy, radiation in the sea, speculation, gas price, outsourced workers' rights, silver paper censorship, Shetino, Greek debt, stand your ground, Trayvon, Ron Paul, Mitt Romney, banning speech in public halls and corporate money funding law, Apple and the patent wars, I can't take it anymore.
And that was by Jay, the musician, or the music man, published in 2012. If that isn't, I don't know if this is really cutting edge, but kind of Free Radio Santa Cruz territory. Here's one that's a little more in that line. It's got some words I've never heard of. It's a song, Pet Names for Genitalia.
Old Blind Bob, Hanging Johnny, Fishing Rod, Tally Whacker, Pocket Rocket, One-Eyed Trouser Trout. Ding Dong, Ankle Spanker, Pork Sword, Engine Cranker, Hairy Hot Dog, Davy Crockett, let them all hang out.
Pet names for genitalia, you know the girls think of them, and you gotta love them. Pet names for genitalia, there's always something silly about Little Willie.
Wang, Wazoo, Weenie, Whacker, Pecker, Pee-Pee, Kidney, Cracker, Heat, Seeking, Moisture, Missile, Giggle, Stink, Love, Whistle, Tube, Steak, Uncle Dick, this is getting really sick, I'm not through, there's one more, Purple Helmet, Warrior.
Pet names for genitalia, you know the girls think of them, and you gotta love them. Pet names for genitalia.
There's always something silly about little Willie. Pet names for genitalia. You know the girls think of them.